Well, all right, tonight is Wednesday, the 5th of September, which is Jack Cooper's birthday. Happy birthday. No, the 4th, yesterday. Today's the 4th. My watch is wrong. The 4th of September, today, is Jack's birthday. So happy birthday to Jack. That's right. Happy birthday. There are a number of birthdays. In fact, if you have or have had a birthday in the past week, would you just lift your hand up? Do we have anybody else?
Friday.
Yours is Friday. I admit that's what it was. I mixed y'all's two up. That's what it was. Because I said, Jack, I thought yours was Friday. And he said, no, it's today. And so happy birthday Friday. My bride's is going to be next Tuesday. And so she asked for something really, really, really big for her birthday. So I'm going to take her to the Cabarrus County Fair. And so that's what we're doing for her birthday. And we're going to have fun, I hope. And so that's... my pocketbook can afford that, as long as she doesn't ride too many rides or eat too many... whatever they're going to have. By the way, speaking of eating, that was a wonderful Sunday bar we had. And so you want to clap? Everybody look over your right shoulder and see what's next. We have our scales there. We're going to weigh you right out. No, I'm just kidding. Somebody asked me what those scales were for. Our Guatemala team left out of here on Saturday, but last Thursday and Friday they were weighing all their bags, making sure that they could take everything they needed to take. And so that's what those scales are for. Those weren't ominous threats to keep you from eating from the Sunday bar. But all right. Well, it's good to be with you. We're going to get back into our 2020 vision. What we are looking for is our kingdom concept. But what we're doing tonight is a carryover from several weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, which is the collective potential. That is, if you look around, listen, do this for a second. Just look around, see who all's here. This isn't see who's not here. Just look and see who's here. And see who's here. And then think about what you know about these people. I will go with just some little things that I know. I want to talk to you about what I know about your... what you do for a living. So Howard is a musician and a minister. So those two things complement each other. Phil was a banker. And Marcia is a real estate agent. And I don't know. Tom's a minister. We have a nurse and a school teacher and a shoe salesman and another nurse. And Cynthia, what do you do? What did you do?
I worked at a law firm.
Worked at a law firm. And then we have a doctor, and Chick just sells whatever will sell. No, Chick's a hairstylist. I'm not a hairstylist, a hairstylist supply salesman. That's what he did. And in fact, he still does it. If you go out and look in the back of his Buick, he's got combs that says Chick Seaford on it. And I think if you flip them over, it says, "Selling is my game," I think. And then we have another hairstylist, Claudette. Larry, what'd you do?
Tech support power utilities.
Tech support at the power utilities, is that what I heard right?
Yes.
All right, good. Good. And you worked in school cafeteria, is that correct, Vicki?
Yes, ma'am.
A manager? What school did you work?
Wyckoff Elementary, Central Ferris High School, and Carmel Middle School in Charlotte.
Wow, very good. Very good. Now, how long has it been since you, I guess we could talk about this later, but I'm interested now. How long has it been since you retired? Okay, so about 5 years now. Very good. I know Judy Russ was a nurse. Don, what do you do?
I work at Honda dealership.
Honda dealership? You sell cars or you just fixed them?
No, I worked in the parts department.
Oh, I worked in the parts department. Jim, you were an engineer?
Yeah.
Still are. I guess you don't ever stop being an engineer. You just kind of fade away, right? That's good. And so Jim and Jack, you were in real estate purchasing with your company. What company did you work for? Engineering. I just heard the stories of you buying big pieces of property for your firm. So I guess that's why I thought the real estate end of it. But that's so engineering. Jimmy, were you a fireman?
I was for a little while, but I did mostly welding and fabrication work.
Oh, very good. Welding?
Manufacturing.
Very good. So I just want you to look around. I know I didn't get to everybody. If I didn't call your name, please forgive me. I started by ones I knew, but when I got about halfway, I realized I didn't know anybody else. So I figured I'd ask. No, I'm just teasing. But it's good as we look around and see this group of people that God has put us here to wonder, have you ever wondered why did God put this group of folks together? What did he have? What's he up to? And I think it's fair to ask, what's God up to when we see this group of people that come together and call themselves First Baptist Church? So that's what we're doing, and we're doing it from several different perspectives. We talked really about demographics the last time that we were together, 2 weeks ago. Last week, I stepped back and talked about the why of doing all this. We have to know ourselves. We have to know others. Tonight, we're going to hit this idea of collective potential from a couple of different areas just as we flesh out who we are that God has put together. Ultimately, the final goal of this part is to find our kingdom concept, which is a simple, clear, big idea that defines how we glorify God and make disciples. And so on the left-hand side, that red spot represents our local predicament, that is the context that we serve. The upper right side, that blue side, represents our collective potential, this part that we're looking at right now. And then the bottom part we'll introduce in the next week or so. So that's what I just covered. That's where we want to know what our part is, this place where they all come together and really drive who we are and what God has for us. This is where we are to date. When we talked about the local predicament, we talked about our location being central to schools. We talked about our transitioning population and economy, redevelopment of downtown, bringing folks back in. And then the idea of there still being some poverty in our area, educational struggles because of that. And then the kind of a drug issue in some places in our county and others. And then the jail. Those are all things that we mentioned, not things that I'm telling you is the case. It's just things that we have mentioned. In fact, today, for about 10 minutes, Alex and I had a fairly lengthy discussion, as much as you can, 10 minutes, about the growth along the 49 corridor heading back east. I don't know if you've noticed what's happening, but the neighborhood that I live in is a fairly new neighborhood, built around 2007, 2008, 2009, stopped with the downturn in the economy, and then started again in about 11 or 12, and they're headed to phase four now, which I think is the final phase out past where y'all live on the far side. I have neighbors here, so I'm just confirming what I know. It's nice to have neighbors, and so I'm just confirming what I know. But if you notice, how many of you remember when 49 through Harrisburg was just two lanes? It hadn't been that long ago. In fact, I remember when they used to enforce the 35-mile-an-hour speed limit and not just sneer at it when they go by it. Harrisburg went from a sleepy little town that was really the gateway to the racetrack to now what it is now, which is a bedroom community of Charlotte. And what you're seeing is that's going to keep moving. I'm afraid it's going to keep moving down all the way to Mount Pleasant, down that 49 corridor, which is going to do something for us. Because right now, when we talk about growth in our area, what we're talking about is the west side. So Laurel Park West, you know, we're talking about the Lyles intersection with Poplar Tent. We say, oh, man, it's booming out there. Well, it won't be long until we're talking about it's booming in our backyard. It's booming right here. And so these things are changing the way that we look at this context. So right now we're trying to answer this question, who has God made us to be? So are there any questions? I had to do all that to catch you up to where we are. If you have your Bibles, turn with me to Revelation chapter 2. Revelation chapter 2. I want to read to you just the first of seven letters to seven churches in Asia Minor. I just want to read the church at Ephesus. We'll get back to this, but I want to set the scene for some questions that I'm going to ask as we lead through tonight. All right, so Revelation chapter 2, starting in verse number 1, God's word says this. To the angel of the church in Ephesus write, the words of him who holds the seven stars in his right hand, who walks among the seven golden lampstands. I know your works, your toil, and your patient endurance, and how you cannot bear with those who are evil, but have tested those who call themselves apostles and are not, and found them to be false. I know you are enduring patiently and bearing up for my name's sake, and you have not grown weary. But I have this against you, that you have abandoned the love you had at first. Remember, therefore, from where you have fallen, repent, and do the works you did at first. If not, I will come to you and remove your lampstand from its place, unless you repent. Yet this you have, you hate the works of the Nicolaitans, which I also hate. He who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. To the one who conquers, I will grant to eat of the tree of life, which is the paradise of God. And so what we have is we have the first of seven letters. Notice that this one and all the other ones, they're all written in the same style. That this one is written to the angel of the church in Ephesus. That word angel, the word angel in any context, in the Greek or in the Hebrew, means messenger. An angel is a messenger. And so in this case, it's probably not talking about a supernatural being that God created to be his messengers. But in this case, it's probably talking about the elder or the pastor who is the overseer of the church at Ephesus and throughout. So he's writing to this leader, this messenger of the church in Ephesus. And then he talks about Jesus's grasp or understanding or assessment of that church. Now, in case you wonder, what Jesus thinks about a church is really all that matters. So if Jesus says something about a church, there's no other judge or arbiter or somebody else you go to get their opinion. So when Jesus says this, you don't then go, well, wonder what the guy down the street thinks about our church, because we don't like what Jesus said. So when Jesus says it, that is the most accurate final word of the statement about the church. And so we have that, and we have it throughout. I'm going to read that to you, because what I want you to see is that the church had an identity. And it wasn't the building, and it wasn't even the structure, the corporate structure, or the political structure of the church. It was that the church put together had an identity. Their actions and their heart, because he speaks of both. I know your works. And then he says, you've left the first love. So both passion, love, and works, the things they did, were in clear view of Jesus. And he had that whole picture of the church together. And I would just suggest to you that we too have that kind of an identity. Maybe not like the church at Ephesus, but what I'm saying is every church has an identity. Together, we are something that's special. It's something, and I don't know how else to say it, but when a church comes together, like we do, there is something unique and special about that gathering of people than any other kind of gathering on the face of the earth. So when a church says, we're going to be the church of Christ here, not like the church of Christ, but you know, we're going to be Jesus's church right here. God works in us in a way that he doesn't work in my family or in the school PTA or in the sheriff's department or anywhere else. He does something different in a church that he doesn't do anywhere else. And so he puts us together in this church to accomplish those kinds of things. Now, some of y'all are looking at me like you've never thought those thoughts before. Or to quote Piglet or Pooh, one of them, think, thought Pooh, I've never thought like that before. Have you thought that? I mean, have you ever come to grips with the fact that in a church, not the building, in the people, you remember, This is the church. This is the steeple. Open the door and see all the people. You know, the people are the church. That God does something in us that he doesn't do anywhere else. This means yes, y'all get it. This means no, you don't get it. I'm really wanting some feedback here. Okay, good. You get this. Because it's imperative to understand this. Because that means that the expectations of a church are different than the PTA or the sheriff's department or your family even. The expectations of a church are we are the representatives of Jesus Christ here in this community. And he has indwelt us, plurally, with his spirit and given us, plurally, his gifts so that plurally, together, collectively, we can do what he's called us to do. And our collectiveness is greater than the sum of our parts. Okay, so this is where we are. It's what we're looking at. So, let me turn the page. Wait, I'm way behind. This is the bad part about me using notes. It takes me a while. So, here's the question. How has God put us together? I'm going to ask you about capabilities. And we're going to have some feedback now. I'm going to walk up onto the stage and probably pull the screen out so y'all can see. I want some feedback on this. But I'm going to ask you, how do our capabilities cluster? What do you see in our church as themes in both spiritual gifts? And by the way, how many of you would say, I know what my spiritual gift is? Anybody? Okay, so I'm going to ask that question in just a second. And then skills and passions. Now, passions, I asked you 2 weeks ago what some passions are, and we mentioned some things. But I want you to understand what a passion really is. If I said, Cynthia, I'm going to pick on you. If I said that Larry Hines is passionate about racing, what would that mean about Larry? He goes to all the races. And he knows something about race cars. Right. And he enjoys talking with other people about race cars. Okay, so do you have any fishermen or hunters in here? You say you're passionate about it. What's that mean in your life? Do you own a gun?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so you've invested some of your income into being able to carry out this sport. Do you know what the latest trends in hunting are? Would you say that? Yeah, I mean, you know what? When Mossy Oak came out with their camouflage, you're like, oh yeah, I know where that's from, and I know that stuff. What's that?
He's got a ghillie suit.
He's got a ghillie suit. Yeah, you really are passionate about it. The reason why I ask you these questions is because passion means something more than just do we like it. So when I ask us about what our passions are for our church, what I mean is what are we invested in? What would we, if we didn't do it, what would it be? You know, or what would we miss? There are some things that we're just not passionate about. But there are other things that we have passion for. Now, I'm not talking about likes and dislikes. I'm not talking about the kind of music. I'm not talking about the color of the carpet. That's not what we're talking about passionate about. I'm talking about scripturally, spiritually passionate. What drives us as a church that says, we have to do this. It reminds me of John Knox. John Knox in Scotland. His passion was Scotland. In fact, his greatest slogan was, it was a prayer to the Lord, give me Scotland or I'll die. That's what we mean by passion. So when we talk about this, and I'm going to write some of this down, I'm going to ask you what you see. Before we talk about specifics, like those three things listed at the bottom, I just want to see what you see clustered in our church. What kind of capabilities do you see clustered in our church? Now, I'll give you an example, but the example I'm thinking of is very easy, and I don't want to take an easy thing away from you. So what do you see as a cluster in our church? Yes, ma'am.
We have strong leaders, like Dan Nicely.
Strong leaders. All right, so we have strong leaders. Strong leaders. So we would say that we have a cluster, that there seems to be a theme of leadership in our church. Very good. What else?
Teachers.
Teachers. Bible teachers or other teachers?
Educators.
Educators. All right, educators. So educators, we have a cluster. That if you're an educator here, would you raise your hand? All right, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Very good. Thank you very much. I used to be an educator. You're an educator?
Oh, I'm
You're next? Oh, okay, go ahead. I just told everybody you sold beauty supplies. No, go ahead. Go ahead, Jim.
Cooks.
Very good. We do have cooks. And I would just suggest that you've heard some things that I've sensed about us. I would suggest that may be stronger than what it looks like at first blush, because the Lord may use that as an avenue for us reaching people that we wouldn't use in other places. So that's very good. Thank you. Thank you, Chick. Somebody else?
Mission-minded.
So we would have a
mission-minded.
By the way, I was given a report that we had 6 ladies in our inaugural meeting of our youngest ladies, women on mission group, circle. Are they still circles or groups?
We're groups,
teams, committees.
We're women on mission.
Women on mission, that's right, groups. So that's a wonderful thing. 6 in the new, and how many of those, I didn't ask you this, how many of those were not involved in either Shells or Pauline Hughes? Are they all brand new?
Only one has been to Shells. All the others are new.
Wow, that's pretty good. That's where you start measuring the success of growth, is when you're reaching brand new people for something. That's very good. Well, any other clusters?
Youth program.
So would you say tell me what you mean.
Well, that's what brought us to this church. Mm-hmm. It's just such a strong thing with the youth.
Strong. So there are...
You got the teens, the youth group.
Right, I'm trying to think how we would phrase that as a cluster. Because what we're looking for, what we're really looking for, is a theme, not a program. So not just a strong program, but really something that we could see a theme through our church. If you would say we have people that are...
We have young people in our church in the valley who would survive, so that would be a cluster.
Yeah.
People committed to the next generation.
Oh, yes. That's yes. Thank you. That's what I was trying to do. I couldn't do it. Thank you, Claudette. Commitment to next generation. So we have people. That's what I was trying to get to. Commitment to the next generation. We have people that are... my mind just wasn't working. For whatever reason, I couldn't cross the transition. But a commitment to the next generation. We have people who recognize the seriousness of it and are committed to doing that. In Awana, we have our workers there. Those who are invested in the youth, those who are serious about not just youth and Awana, but also those young adults, like we've seen. Very good. Thank you. And thank you, Claudette. I owe you for that one, because my mind just shut down in the middle of it. It doesn't happen often, but when it does, I hit a barrier hard. All right, so let's talk about this. Spiritual giftedness. We're still looking for clusters of spiritual giftedness. Yes, ma'am?
I think all your nurses and all your teachers would fit under service or helping professions.
All right, so helping professions. And that's the easy one, by the way, that I was going to state and I just never got back around to, is the nurses and the doctors, and you said teachers as well, these helping professions. Very good. Thank you. All right. Let's talk about spiritual giftedness. For those of you who know what, or think you know, or however you're pretty confident in your knowledge of spiritual giftedness, would you mind raising your hand and telling me what you think that is? Just and the only reason I'm raising your hand so I can call on you because I don't want anybody else to. Yes, ma'am.
Teaching, encourager, administrative, in that order.
Teaching, encourager, and administrative in that order. Very good. Somebody else?
Administration, hospitality, and profit.
All right. Very good. Prophet's not welcome in her own hometown, I've heard. You've lived it, huh? Yeah, that's right. So, anybody else? Yes, ma'am. Ms. Bennett? Yes, ma'am.
Administration, discernment, and teaching.
Administration, discernment, and teaching. By the way, we have now 3 out of 3 who've mentioned what?
Administration.
Administration. So, that's interesting. Somebody else? Yes, sir.
Teaching,
that's right. Somebody else?
Teaching, administration, and helps.
Teaching, administration, and helps. Somebody else?
Artistic.
Artistic? Somebody else? Yes, ma'am.
I'd say teaching and encouragement, but based on the number of people that have been teaching, it seems like our passion is biblical literacy.
Yeah, yeah. That, and hold off, because I'm going to ask about passions in just a second. We're going to circle back around and push that. That's good. So, anybody else want to volunteer?
I'm scared.
They're scared, yeah.
I could say that in my Sunday school class, I could identify a number of their spiritual gifts that I don't think they're even aware that they have it.
Right.
Because of the way we serve.
Right. Yeah, that's right. And let me just tell you, this is not... I don't have time to teach on spiritual gifts today, but 1 Peter 4:10 really tells us what our spiritual gifts are for, and that is, as each one of you has been given a gift, minister one to another. And so our gifts are only really expressed as we minister toward others. But so far, here's what we've heard. We've heard administration, we've heard teaching, we've heard a couple of encouragement, which is, the breath of life of a church are encouragers. Not anybody else is bad, but I'm just saying that as somebody who that's not necessarily my strong gift, and I have a different view on giftedness. By the way, I think that as we all grow more and more like Christ, we will demonstrate more and more of the gifts because Christ perfectly demonstrated them all. Brother Jack,
we got some good preaching here too.
Well, good preaching. Thank you, thank you for that. I do love to preach, but it's driven in two ways. I'll just say this since we're talking about other people's gifts. The two gifts that you hear coming out is teaching in me and also prophecy. Discernment, prophecy, I think are flip sides to the same coin in a lot of ways. And that is, I want to make sure that the truth is told, but then even more than the truth is told, I want us to live by the truth. And so that's what drives me. So if you wonder, you know, what spiritual gift does Pastor Jim have? I really have a lot of them. I think God gives pastors lots so that we could go to a church and fill in some gaps that may or may not exist. But the two that drive me are teaching and prophecy. I said earlier, I don't have time to teach this or tell you this, but the way that you know you're a teacher... This is clear as the nose on my face. The way that you know that you're a teacher is when somebody says, the Bible says such and such, and you open the scriptures to make sure it does. If you check up on the speakers, more than likely you're a teacher. Because you want to make sure that that it's taught in exactly the right way. That's good. We'll do that down the road. I'm sure there'll be an opportunity for us to look at our spiritual gifts. So we talked about clusters, and just from what I've heard, I would say teaching, administration. Interesting that the two ministers' wives both have discernment, prophecy in your wheelhouse. That's pretty, to me, that's interesting. Teaching, administration, and encouragement. We had Good. What about passions? We've talked a little bit about passion. No, let's do skills next. I'm sorry, I'm trying to do this in order. What skills? They can be biblical skills, spiritual skills, church skills, or they can be just life skills. So we're not just, I don't want to narrow it too quickly. Cooks was one that was mentioned. I would suggest that that also is a skill. What other skills do we have that emerge?
Music.
Music, musicians. I was talking to Brother Howard today. And like every worship pastor that I've ever known, he wants a bigger choir. So, let me just take this time. If you have the skill of music and you aren't using it, you can see Howard. He will make sure that you can use your skill of music if you go talk to him. And even if you don't have a skill in music, but want to have a skill in music, go see Howard. He can deal with you too. And if you don't have anything else to do in the church and you're wondering, why did God bring me here? I need to find something. Go see Howard. He will put you to work. There is plenty to do in our music ministry. And I teased about every minister of music, but we really are across the nation at a weird time in our church life. And that is, in many, many, many churches like ours, there is a decline in music education and music application. And what I mean by that is, we don't have tons and tons of young people saying, "Ooh, I want to sing." It's one of the reasons why you'll see that we have the Graysons and the Kepley daughters who are going to sing this Sunday. We're trying to prime the pump to get some younger people to join in. Not because youth trumps age, but because youth outlasts age. And so if we're going to have a future in music, we have to gain some ground. So that's where we are. But anyway, so that's a good one. Musicians, we do have some capable musicians in our church. So what else?
You have a lot of nurses, a lot of medical.
Yes. Yes, we have a lot of the skills. Let me put skills here. These are skills. We have nurses and doctors in a larger number than probably other churches in Concord, somewhat because of the proximity to our hospital on this side of town, also because of the just the nature of being a nurse or a doctor. First Baptist is appealing in that way and has been historically. If I don't think I'm speaking out of turn, anybody who's been here a lot longer than I have, we have historically had doctors and nurses in our church. So that's good. Something else?
EMS would be fit in there.
Yeah, EMS as well. Hopefully we won't need them this week. Some lawyers. We used to, but I don't think. I'm trying to think who. We got an IRS man, but I don't talk to him about that. Richard Polk is an IRS man. Yes, ma'am?
It seems like we have quite a few financial people in the business.
Yes, we do have people in finance. Now, especially finance in not just in the financial field, but in all kinds of the financial skill. Very good. And we see that when it comes time for the budget and that kind of thing. All right, we're going to move on real quick. Passions. And this, Claudette, tell me your passion, that passion again you mentioned.
Well, based on Sunday school, we have compassion for people that are
biblical literacy. Biblical literacy. Do I think that? Yes. Yes, I do. And I think that's if you were to go back in, I've forgotten what it's called. I had it last time. The survey that we did 20 years ago that I asked you about 2 weeks ago, that survey, it emerged from there. A large number of folks in our church identified biblical literacy as one of the reasons they were at our church. So, yes, absolutely.
Well,
What else? Passions. Something that drives our train.
Missions.
Missions. What else?
The gospel.
The gospel. And I would suggest that both of those first two are because of that third one. That the gospel is the reason why we give ourselves to biblical literacy, the reason why we give ourselves to mission is because we really value the gospel. Others?
Budget or giving?
Sir?
Budget or giving?
Budget or giving?
Is that fit with others?
As our passion. Boy, that's teed up for a pastor. Yeah, since I'm preaching stewardship this month, I'm going to put that. Finance and giving. And giving. All right. Anything else? Yes, ma'am.
Love of Christ.
Love of Christ. Love of Christ. And I would also, I'm going to add this one. I mean, love of each other is our passion. And I saw it from a way that most of you will never see it, and that is from the perspective of a pastor who was trying to see if I was right for you and you were right for me. In that context, Brother Phil was there. Most of the questions were about safeguarding the love of Christ and the love of each other. I answered more questions about demonstrating love than probably any other group of questions. And so I would just suggest that's how you notice passion as it comes out. So that's good. All right, we're going to stop right there. Those are good capability clusters. Those are good things. I'm going to try to move on and get some traction. Thank you for your participation in this. As you look at this, we start to see a theme in who we are. And so that's going to lead us, as we start to look at it overlaps, it's going to start showing us who God intends us to be. So let's talk corporate character for just a second. That is, this idea I introduced to you from Revelation chapter 2. All I want you to see from this next slide is that it's a biblical concept, because I don't have time to teach you every story here, but I am going to lead to ask some questions about our collective or corporate character. So first, we saw at the Church of Ephesus, their endurance. It says twice that they patiently endured. They patiently endured. They patiently endured. And their discernment. You were able to see those who said that they were apostles but are not. Okay, so those two themes are about Ephesus. Now you can take it to the negative. What was the negative about Ephesus? They had lost their first love. But I would suggest that that's not a character flaw, but rather it's a practice flaw. They stopped practicing. Their character was discernment. If you do a study of these, you would see that the church at Ephesus, their problem was they took discernment so seriously that they lost love. They stood so strongly on, hey, if you come in here and you're teaching something that's crazy, you're not coming in here. And they went so far in that direction that they divided up and they lost their love. So that's good. So let's look at Smyrna. The church at Smyrna, it's right after that, verses 8 and 9. Angel of the church in Smyrna write, the words of the first and the last who died and came to life. I know your tribulation and your poverty, even though you're rich, and the slander of those who say that they are Jews and are not, but are a synagogue of Satan. Do not fear what you're about to suffer. Behold, the devil is about to throw some of you in prison, that you may be tested, and for 10 days you will have tribulation. Be faithful unto death, and I will give you the crown of life. Smyrna, notice their corporate character was faithfulness and persecution. Faithfulness, even in spite of persecution. He says, I know your tribulation and your poverty, but be faithful unto death, and I'll give you the crown of life. So this idea of faithfulness and persecution. One more from this. the church at Thyatira, verses 18 and following. I'm not going to read it all, but you'll see that theirs was love, faith, and service. I know your works, and he says it. I know your works, your love, and faith, and service, and patient endurance. So they are known for that. And by the way, like I said earlier, what Jesus says about your church is the most important thing about your church. So we want to invite his understanding of who we are. But it's not just in these churches at Revelation that we see. By the way, I skipped some. If you notice, if you go into further, you'll see some negative examples. The church at Sardis, I know your works. You have the reputation of being alive, but you are dead. Now that is a terrible epitaph. In fact, the only thing good about the church at Sardis is there at verse 4, yet you still have a few names in Sardis, people who have not soiled their garments, and they will walk with me in white, for they are worthy. So they had a remnant in Sardis, but a godly remnant, a remnant that followed Christ, but the rest of them had already sullied themselves. And then, just to say the word Laodicea, you know that that's not good. I wish that you were hot or cold, but you're neither hot nor cold. And because of that, I will spew you out of my mouth. That, by the way, does not mean cold-hearted towards me or warm-hearted towards me. It really means of use, one way or another. The waters that flowed into Laodicea, there was a hot mineral bath that was good for you if you went and sat in the hot. And there was a cold spring that was good for you if you went and drank from the source. But when the two mixed together right there in Laodicea, it wasn't good for nothing. And that's what Jesus is saying. I wish you were either good for soothing aching muscles or good for refreshment, but you're not good for any of that. You're right in the middle, and I'm going to spew you out of my mouth. And so, Thyatira, love, faith, and service. Laodicea is negative. But then also, if you go back to the Old Testament, you'll see the blessing that Jacob gave on his sons, and he gave this one for Judah. Judah, you are a lion, which is a messianic proverb or messianic prophecy, looking forward to the lion of the tribe of Judah. But Judah is a lion. Issachar, a strong donkey. Now, I'm not sure we'd like that today, but I'm sure in those days it was really good. You're a strong donkey. And then Benjamin, a ravenous wolf. I don't know how that's good anyway or not. But those are the characters. And notice that when he's talking about that, he's not just talking about individual sons. The whole tribes became known for that. There's this corporate character. Does anybody know what else Benjamin, son of my right hand, Benjamin, what they were known for? Two things they were known for in the Old Testament. Anybody know? This is just a trivia question. Larry, what are they known for?
One thing, the first king.
The first king, that's right. Saul was a Benjaminite. Here's what they're known for. All the way through when you read about them. They were left-handed. What? They were left-handed what? They were left-handed slingers. They used slings, and that's how they defeated folks. And they were all, now I don't think they were all left-handed. I think they just trained left-handed. Probably the first guy that figured out how to do a sling was left-handed. He just taught everybody else. You know, the first guy that teaches somebody else to play golf is left-handed, and everybody plays golf that way. How many of you have ever watched me baptize and think something looks funny? Has anybody ever thought that? It's okay if you have. I was taught by a left-handed preacher to baptize. And so if you notice, I baptized left-handed. Because it's the way I was taught. And so these guys in Benjamin, they were known as left-handed slingers. That's just trivia. I got off. I'm sorry. What I really want you to see is the corporate character of these groups. Not any of these are individuals. These are groups, godly groups of people that the Lord, because Jacob, when he named Judah and Issachar and Benjamin, when he did that, he was speaking the truth of the Lord. In fact, all the rest of the Bible is based on the fact that Judah is a lion and that Jesus is the lion of the tribe of Judah. And so this is true characteristics, just like the churches are. So that leads me to our question. Who are we? Now, if I am Jacob and I'm getting ready to bless our church, what animal best represents us and why? What would you say? If Jacob is getting ready to bless First Baptist Church of Concord and he's about to call us an animal name, what would he do? Linda, I see your hand first.
A dog, because we're faithful.
Same thing. A dog. Who's going to say the same thing?
I was going to say dog.
Why? Why were you going to say it? I heard what.
Well, because I thought he's a loving or he's a hateful. He's everything. A dog can be anything.
A dog can be anything. Linda said, because we're faithful. We're faithful, loyal, that's the other word. Very good. Loyal. Those are good. And Chick said anything. There are no dogs, just bad owners, right? No bad dogs, just bad owners. All right. What else? Anybody else besides a dog?
An eagle.
An eagle. Why is that?
Well, they can oversee everything.
Mark whispered in his ear, "You said they were nosy." That's good. Anybody else? I know you've never thought of us like this. This is just one of those things to look at it from a different perspective. If I was about to bless us as an animal, what would I say? I kind of like the idea of a dog. By the way, a dog in our culture is much better than a dog in the Old Testament culture. In the Old Testament culture, if you're called a dog, that would not be nice in any shape or form or fashion. What else?
A deer.
A deer. And why is that?
You see them pictured as sweet, loving. And I don't know. It just they're graceful.
But they hide a lot.
They run real fast. That's good. None of these are going to be perfect. I mean, we're just trying to... Because what we're doing is we're trying to see what we see as our character together. Not as individuals, but together. Anybody else? We have deer, dog, eagle.
We're sheep because we are bad to get off track.
Bad to get off track.
I'm speaking for myself.
Sheep. Okay. Sheep. A flock of sheep. That's what Jesus really did call us, so that's good. That's good. Somebody else, Debbie?
I think we're the strong donkey.
The strong donkey. That's good. The strong donkey. Tell me why.
We've carried each other through a lot.
Strong donkey. We've carried each other through a lot.
Struggling.
Carried. Supported. That's the same idea as supported. And who said stubborn? I'll write that down. But, come on, my favorite people are stubborn. I didn't even look at you. Oh, she knows. Let me tell you, the reason why she knows that is because my number two dog is an Australian Shepherd. And she is the smartest dog, she is the sweetest dog, and she is the most stubborn dog you've ever met. And she reminds me so much of Myra. in every way, sweet, she... So, Myra said that she was an organizer, an administrator.
And bossy.
And that's what that dog does, she's a shepherd. If she doesn't like the way you're going, she's going to knock into the side of you and put you the right way. The dog, not Myra, she does it with looks, like... That's not bad. Hey, listen, if you think that anything I've said about my wife is bad, you don't know what I think is good. Because I am thankful.
His favorite dog, so I take that as a compliment.
Yeah, Kimber is my favorite. All right, those are good. Let's move on. I have another question. I'm not going to write these down. Oh, wait, I was supposed to write those on the other side. I might write this one down. What spiritual lesson can people learn from us? So if we were to be held up, remember, that's what we do with the churches in Revelation. We hold them up and say, let's learn this lesson from Ephesus. If I were to say Ephesus, we're going to learn a lesson. What would that lesson be? Love. First love. Ephesus, first love. So, with us, what kind of spiritual lesson would we preach to the world?
Conservative.
I'm going to write these down here because I want to capture them, but I'm not going to write them up there.
I think endurance. I think in the case of our church, it was pray.
Prayer. And by the way, I would suggest that faithful praying is the key to endurance. Those two are hand in hand. I'm not negating that. I'm just saying those two are the two rails on the same train. Prayer and endurance go together. What else? Anything else? All right. Endurance, prayer, conservative. Those are all good lessons. I'm going to end now because I'm getting in the habit of trying to help you out. And so we've got more to do, but I'll catch up next week. Let me ask you this question. Are you starting to see any patterns about who we are? I would suggest, I've done this before, but what you see the idea of love, encouragement, love of Christ in each other, this idea of a dog, that really is what it's, I mean, we even have a kind of love named after it, puppy love. But, you know, so you see this idea of love. You see this idea of faithfulness to the gospel and Bible teaching that goes with it and missions that are propelled from it. And then you also see, and I don't know if this kind of flows from the idea of love, but what you see is a helps-oriented, this helps-oriented, almost hospitality. Cooks. I want you to see that we are special. This isn't just the kindergarten, like everybody hug each other and tell you you're special. God has put us together in such a grouping. Did you have your hand up? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. But we're no pushovers. The strong donkey kind of shows that. We're no pushovers, but we are also quick to help and probably find our greatest passion in helping. Maybe. I'm not trying to put words in our mouth. I'm just trying to hear what y'all are saying and then process it through what I've seen. And put it up together. It's possible that becomes our collective potential. We'll talk more about this next week. I've got a few more exercises that we can do. Are there any questions? Is everybody clear or at least semi-clear about what we're doing, where we're going, why we're doing this? Okay, because this is going to meet up with this context that we're in, this local predicament. We're going to bring to bear this group that God has put together, loving, strong, biblically based, hospitality-driven group of people that we are, up against the poverty and the educational struggles and the new people coming in. And we're going to start seeing how these things overlap and see how God is going to use that for us to make a difference in our community. And I'm not trying to jump too quickly to conclusions. I'm just trying to speak to the themes. There may be some themes that we've not uncovered yet. And so I'll one more week of this. I'm going to hit it from a different perspective. By the way, the way that you do this in a small group is you go away on a retreat and spend a whole weekend talking about these different things. And then you let it marinate for 3 or 4 months. To think about these things. Now, we're not going to give it that time. I'm moving on. We got places to go and things to do. But this is how vital this is, because we want to know who we are so we can know how to engage the world and how to serve those who are around us. So I hope you're starting to see this come together. I hope you're excited. I am. I really am pumped up, stoked, whatever the word is, encouraged by the answers. Yes, ma'am, Miss Linda.
Next week starts handbills, but most of us want to be involved in this. So is there a way we can still stay involved?
There's a way that y'all will get... there's a way that y'all will be kept in the loop. But as far as involved in the process, I don't know. I'll need to talk to Howard about that. We'll try to figure a way around it. Because handbells are important to us this year, because y'all are going on a state festival next year. So we'll try to work that out. We'll try to keep that going. It may be that that I can email some of the exercises and get y'all's feedback that way. So that way, at least you can speak into the process. It would be separate from the group, but it would still give you an opportunity to speak into the process. That may be a good way to navigate through it. We just need to try to fix this. One of the things, I'm going to turn this off right now. One of the things...